Hey, this is Chris, the host of the Overflowing Life podcast. Before we dive into today's episode, I have two quick but important requests to share with you. First, we're planning something really special and exciting at the end of this season, a question and response episode. I'd love for you to be a part of that. And all you got to do is follow us on Instagram at The Overflowing Life and DM us your burning questions or any topics you're seeking clarification on. Your participation will make this episode truly interactive and enriching for everybody. Second, we're a brand new podcast, so we rely on your support to grow and reach more listeners. If you're enjoying this content, please subscribe and share it with two other friends who you believe would find value in our content as well. Your recommendation really means the world to me and helps our community thrive. Thank you so much for your support. Now, on with the show.
So when we're talking to coaches who have been in a position for a long time and they're well known and they lose that position, if they think their identity comes from being an NFL coach, I mean, you're basically plunging into an abyss. If a player thinks his identity is an NFL player and that career ends, which it's going to, you're lost. But same for a salesperson or a police officer. If you get your identity from what you do, what you have, and what people think about you, you're going to be bouncing around in life in a ton of anxiety and fear and constant concern about, am I making it? Am I doing it?
Welcome, friends, to our latest episode of the Overflowing Life podcast, where we navigate the crossroads of modern leadership, authentic living, and the redemptive power of business. I'm your host, Chris Lagarde. Today, we have an incredibly special episode for you. Joining us is Jamie Winship. He's a remarkable individual with a wealth of experience in bringing peace to conflict areas around the world. I'm not kidding about that. Middle East and a bunch of other places. Jamie's journey from law enforcement to developing the transformative identity method has been nothing short of inspiring. And this episode is packed with insights for leaders on why understanding your unique identity is crucial, not just for your business, but also for your personal life. Jamie's stories are not just compelling, they're life-changing. And I say that from personal experience, because his stories and outlook on identity have changed my life. So buckle up as we dive into this powerful conversation that's sure to give you some valuable takeaways. Let's get started. Welcome, welcome everybody to this week's episode. We've got another interview this week. As always, I feel like I say this every time, I am so excited to talk to this guest. I have Jamie Winship with me this week. He has decades of experience bringing peaceful solutions to some of the world's highest conflict areas. And after a distinguished career in law enforcement in the Metro DC area, he earned an MA in English and developed a unique process called the Identity Method. And this process of identity transformation is the key to resolving inner conflict and acquiring new levels of learning and creativity. His unconventional efforts to bring about societal and racial reconciliation led him to places like Indonesia, Jordan, Iraq, Palestine, Israel, and all the way back to the U.S. If you look for him in other podcasts and on YouTube, you'll find plenty of examples of crazy, amazing stories that he is well known for. So go do that, depending on what we get into today. And then he's worked with leaders in professional sports, business, education, law enforcement, government, nonprofit, other sectors. He's also the author of a great book called Living Fearless. He and his wife, Donna, are co-founders of Identity Exchange, which is a training and consulting agency that helps individuals and teams discover the new levels of creativity and resiliency within the framework of true identity. So with that said, Jamie, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Wow, it's great to be with you.
It is great to be with you. And we've known each other for now about a year and a half, give or take, almost 2 years. I've had experience with your organization and getting to know you. And I know you pretty well, but some of my listeners may know you, some of them may not. So I'd love to start off with like, hey, what do leaders or what do the folks listening and the leaders listening need to know about you?
I think that I'm just an average person, that the things I struggle with, the success we've seen is really common to humanity. And so I really hope my goal is always that whoever I'm talking to says, I can do that. I could do that. And I feel like if we're training or teaching anyone and they don't come away with like, that seems pretty straightforward and something I can participate in, I think we missed we miss the mark. You know, we're in a celebrity culture, so it's a battle all the time to stay away from that. You know, we have to have some famous person come in and do everything, and just all of us in the truth of who we are is powerful. That your identity is your gift to your world. So that's all I want people to know about me is I'm bringing my identity in this conversation with you, and you're doing it. I know also. So that's the most beautiful thing, most powerful thing we have as humans.
What is your identity? What's the short form version of it?
My identity is, it's funny because we're working on a documentary right now on the human trafficking industry. And my identity is untier of knots. And that's been a process. But a long time ago when I was actually doing the psychological testing for a government agency in the State Department, that's what they called me that. They said, you're an interesting person because you're like, it's like you go into conflict, but you hate conflict. Like you're trying to always resolve things and untangle things. That was when I was 19 that they said that about me. And all these years later, I'm 64 now. It's like, wow, that is who I am. I'm an untier of knots. And whenever that's the identity I'm operating in, I find that I'm helpful and successful. When I move outside of that identity, not very successful. So that's what I do.
I love that. Untire of knots. And, you know, as you'll see, Jamie has a very different, you have a different take on what identity is. And I would love, how would you define identity and getting into the idea of, because I mean, identity is a big word. How do you identify? That's a hot topic these days. And the way you speak about it is very different than the culture is speaking about it. And so how would you define what identity is and what is it not?
Yeah, interesting. So identity is the truest thing about you. It's identity is rooted and grounded in love. It's identity is received in community. Identity is who you've always been and are becoming. The identity is the most beautiful thing about a human being. It's deeper than roles and gender and all of that stuff. It's deeper than that. It's something that's knit together within you when you're in your mother's womb, and you're born into understanding and as Kierkegaard said, with God's help, I'm becoming who I am. You already are that. The problem is the counterfeit to true identity, which I'll say again is true identity is received in community. So it's from outside of yourself. It's something you've received and you're discovering. And moving into every culture's known this. Every culture's had naming ceremonies. It's where the person begins to understand who they are within the community and how valuable it's your inherent worth and value apart from production. The counterfeit to that is radical individualism, which is what radical individualism is self-generated. It's subjective to circumstances and it produces almost immediate conflict internally and externally. True identity brings harmony and reconciliation because I see myself as part of a whole. Like I'm an untier of knots, but an untier of knots by themselves is not super valuable unless there's other identities working together on the different different challenges that we face in life. So that's what true identity is. It's just the truest thing about you. It's interesting. We're doing this documentary working on, so it's fresh in my mind, and we're interviewing law enforcement people with years of experience in the whole child crime, human trafficking. And we found particular federal, local law enforcement people, and they're deeply compassionate, but they didn't begin compassionate. They began, we're going to lock everybody up and like that. But when they hit the wall of like, wow, this isn't working and there's got to be another way. And they discover the depth of who they really are and the gift they're bringing to the world. They all say it's something I've always known about myself, but couldn't articulate. And so when we ask them, like, why did you go into law enforcement? The person we just interviewed, he's a commander of an organized crime task force, and his identity is defender of the innocent. and he's in his 60s. And I asked him, when did you know you were a defender of the innocent? And he said, I've kind of always known, but never been able to articulate those words. I've always been living it. And so your identity is always present. It gets hammered by the world. It gets crushed by ego and all these things, but it's still a little candle that's burning. And all it needs is to be recognized and developed, and it turns into this beautiful, full gift to the world. So, yeah, that's what it's beautiful. Different from radical individualism, which is what we're facing in the world.
And so, leaders, rewind that and listen to it again, because this is a very different way of looking at identity. Most of the time, like I alluded to, I identify as this. I live in the Philly area, so I'm an Eagles fan. Unfortunately, this year, even last year, it's not the team I play on or root for. Okay, I want you all to hear that. It is not the job you do. It is not, you're not a father. That might be that's a role you play, and your identity has an impact on that, but it is deeper than that. Like Jamie, like you said, I love grounded in love, received in community, and it's something you're becoming. You've always been that, and you're being drawn towards it. So with that said, how does one, I'm just going to go right into it. I wasn't sure how quickly I'd get to this part of the conversation, but how does one, I know how I've been, we've talked about this in previous episodes with my co-host who, she's not able to be here today, unfortunately, but it's taken me a long time to get to the point where I can say I'm a builder of constructs and a teaching prophet. You helped me with that. And yet there was a lot of work that went into that. What practically could you say to leaders, say, oh, wow, I have not thought about identity the way I'm a leader. I'm a CEO. I'm a salesperson, whatever. I need to shift that. I realize there's something that needs to shift. How do they do that? How do they begin to do that?
Yeah, well, you know, and so just, and you know this, Chris, because you live this way and I do too. It's like, unless what we're talking about works on Monday morning when you're all by yourself and everything's basically going to hell in your life, unless it holds true, then it's just, we're just talking about things that don't matter. It has to work in reality. The things that we're engaging, it have to work in reality. So every time you ask me a question, I'm thinking of real situations in real life, not theoretical or hypothetical. So currently, right now, you know, we work with people in the NFL, and this is this time in the NFL when coaches are getting fired, and it's this huge scramble, and the anxiety and tension levels very high, as you can imagine. So when we're talking to coaches who have been in a position for a long time and are well known, and they lose that position, if they think their identity comes from being an NFL coach, I mean, you're basically plunging into an abyss. If a player thinks his identity is an NFL player and that career ends, which it's going to, you're lost. But same for a salesperson or a police officer. If you get your identity from what you do, what you have, and what people think about you, you're going to be bouncing around in life in a ton of anxiety and fear and constant concern about, am I making it? Am I doing it? And so for the easiest way to work through this process, and we just, you know, I just did this in Wichita with 800 people at one time, but is to just begin with, like, what am I afraid of? Like in life, what produces fear and anxiety in me? And then as you're digging into that, and, you know, we can talk more about that process, but this is the question I always ask people. What are names you believe about yourself that hurt you? What are names that you believe about yourself that hurt you? Some names are negative for sure. You know, you're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You're not fast enough. They hurt you. But also names like you're the most amazing person I've ever met. You're the best player. Those, the cursings and blessings of mankind destroy people because they're not an authentic identity, right? They're based on the view of other people, the view of the marketplace, the view of your production rate. And as long as you're operating in that, I mean, you can see the conflict level in our own country. And it's because we're operating in identities that are not true. And we know deep down they're not true, but we don't know what to do about them. So, the beginning of that process is just, can you tell the truth about what you believe about yourself that hurts you? Because that's really what's dominating your decision making, right? So there's one player, coach, got released and I texted him and I said, hey, remember, your identity is, and I texted him his identity because we did the process together a long time ago. And I said, it's not, you don't get your identity from your position in the NFL. He wrote me back immediately and he said, that's my piece. That's my piece in this whole process, is that I don't get my identity from the job. How much freedom do you have to be creative in your job if you don't get your identity from the job? Oh. That's what leaders need to understand. If you want a team that is a high-performing, joyful, which is the highest level of creativity in human is joy. Joy is the jet fuel of human creativity in the brain. That team needs to be operating in the truth of who each one of them are, and the leader needs to be moving in that identity and knowing how to bring those identities together, because the false identities kill a team, and mostly that's what we're working with, are false identities. Self-protection, self-promotion.
Mm. I want to get to the self-protection, self-promotion, but so going back to how do I learn what my identity is, you'd said, hey, what am I afraid of? What creates the fear? What are those names that I believe about myself that hurt me? They could be I'm not good enough, like mine has been, or I'm the best at this, whatever that is. Could be both positive and negative. Where did they go after that? What happens next?
Yeah, so every human, what every human needs, and when we're working in counterterrorism or anything like this, it's so funny. People think, well, if you're talking to, you know, someone like Hamas or ISIS or something like that, that they're different than the CEO of a, you know, Fortune 500 company. They're not. The motivators are exactly the same. The fears are exactly the same. So,
by the way, listeners, that's true. Jamie's had experience with that, just so you know. Yeah. Anyway, keep going, Jamie. Sorry.
We do work with those folks.
So like, wait a minute.
Yeah, that's not a generalized statement. That's just from actual work with those folks over in the Middle East. This is the same principle, but because humans are humans. And so once a human is looking for attachment and belonging, that's what humans crave, because we're communal and we don't live in isolation. And when we do, we die or we become destructive. Because you're communal, you learn things about yourself from parents and the world, and you learn you're not smart enough. You get measured in school or something, and you fail, and you're like, okay, that's an identity. That's what hurts us. So once you know those, you have to have a place to unload them, to offload them, because you learned them, you took them on, you agreed with them. Once you tell, I have granddaughters, and they think they're beautiful, and they think they're great singers, and they think they're great actresses, and they are, until someone says they're not. Once someone mean or trying to help tells them, you're not a very good singer, every time they look in the mirror, that identity is now present. And that happens as we grow up, intentional or unintentional. And as long as you're agreeing with them, they become true and you live them out. So you have to have a place. You weren't born with them. So we have to have a place to offload them. So you need some type of process in your life to get rid of the false. We call that truth telling or confession or whatever a word is that separates you from the false view or the false identity. And so you need a mental contemplative process, and all innovation is preceded by contemplation in every human being. This isn't about religion. It's about what's true. Contemplation precedes innovation. So in a contemplative, creative, imaginative mindset, which is human's greatest gift, you need a place to visually get rid of those false identities. You have to give them to someone or somewhere. And so you can give them to the universe or love or God or Christ. But you have to be able to see them. And it's amazing when you're with people and say, can you imagine that you're sitting with unconditional love or God or wisdom? And wisdom wants to take the burden from you of all of it that you believe. And you can visualize giving it away, in order that you can think in a new way. You can't think in a new way believing the false, believing the old. The old will dominate because it's a protection measure. And, biologically and through evolution and all, we have systems that protect us. But when we're not in danger, they're still protecting. And we don't know how to shut them down. So this process allows us to drop our fists, we call it, and to receive the truth about who we are.
So once you identify the false beliefs, those things, those names that hurt you. You need somewhere a process to unload that. And, you know, the contemplation, I can already tell this is something that I'm going to tell my listeners. You need to listen to this more than once. Because these things, I've heard them several times, so I already understand, but at the same time, innovation is preceded by contemplation.
Always. Read the history of innovation in humanity. Contemplation precedes it. Otherwise, you just make the same mistakes over and over again, which is what we do.
Yes, it is. It is. So, you know, from there, you offload that. And then is there another step where you're receiving or hearing what your identity is?
Absolutely. Yeah. So remember, the false that you believe about yourself, you received, right? It is all about receiving. And agreeing with what is said about you or what you think about yourself based on circumstance. So it's about, everything's about receiving. And when you know, like you said, we can get to self-protection and self-promotion, but that's when you shut down, is when you're in self-protection. This is the worst state you could be in, is that you can't even contemplate and you can't innovate. You can only imitate in a place of self-protection. So once I've offloaded, I have this mental contemplative process of offloading the false. Like my big one is I'm a disappointment. I have to deal with this every single day. And so in a quiet contemplative breathing, like, okay, what do I believe about myself that I'm a disappointment? Where did I learn that? That's another part of the deeper part of the process. Who told me that I was a disappointment? Where did you learn that? You should see people when you ask them that question, and they start, because your brain remembers who said it. Your brain holds on to that, and you got to reroute that neural pathway. But then once you've got it out here and you give it away to love, like, take this from me. I release this. I don't want to walk in this anymore. You give it to love or God or whatever. And you've swept the house clean. We call it getting empty. Once you're empty, now you can receive. Now you're free to receive. And so then you ask love or God or wisdom, what do you say about me? What does love, the universe, call me? And have your journal or your notepad ready and write down the thoughts that come through your mind. And don't resist them. Like, people have these amazing things come to their mind. You're beautiful. You're loved. You're a poet. You're a defender of innocence, like one of the agents said yesterday. A lover of the guilty, another agent said. Like, don't say no to that, which is our tendency, but to learn to receive from love. Learn to receive. And that's, then your mind changes. Then you have a shift in thinking, and then you can walk out new processes in new ways. So it's truth tell, mind change, form change. You know, when we look at our society, no one really tells the truth. I mean, it's not that everyone lies, but we basically don't know the truth about ourselves or our neighbor for sure. And so you have to learn how to tell the truth. Yeah, I believe I'm a disappointment. That is a huge move, transformational move in a person when they can say that. But don't leave it there.
No.
Then who are you? And then once you understand, well, I'm a defender of innocence, then we would ask, like, these law enforcement people, once you understood that, how did it affect your job? And it's dramatic how it affected their job and their mental health and their compassion level. So that's it. Truth tell, mind change, and then form change. So what does love call you? Does love call you not enough? Does God call you not? Does God make not enough? Does love create not enough? Does the universe develop trees and grass and that's not enough? They're all perfect in their identity. They're all beautiful, and they interconnect with all the others. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful.
It is. And so, man, so many ways I could go with this. So by understanding, listen, it's important for you to understand your identity in the way that we're talking about it, not just your role. And Jamie's alluded to this already. It's because there are only two worldviews we operate from. And when we operate from the false, it leads to not enough. Versus when we're operating in our true self, we are actually operating from abundance. And that scarcity, that fear, that not enough, that self-protection, self-interest, then can be overcome and put away. It's not even like you conquer it. It just goes away. And it's like it flows into the the mystery and accepting things as they are. And like for my journey, which I know you know a little bit for sure about this, Jamie, but it's like, man, when I got to the point where I could understand who I really was, that not enough, that's mine, right? I'm not enough. I'm not good enough, right? It goes to competency, right? So I'm not good enough. Once I understood that's not true and what my true identity, the parts of it are, I'm like, okay, now, regardless of what happens to my business, regardless of what happens to this offer, regardless of what happens with whatever, I know that I can operate with surrender and allowing those things to kind of come in and hold those things loosely. And that's where that conflict, like you said, comes in. Sit tight for a special announcement. Hey, Empowered Leaders. This is your host, Chris Lagarde. Today, I've got something incredibly special for you. If you've been following our journey this season, you know we've explored the transformative path from feeling trapped and lost to discovering a life filled with abundance and excitement. And as you probably know, that is my personal journey over the last few years. It's been an enlightening journey, and I'm thrilled to share the next step with you. I'm launching an exclusive online facilitated experience called Empowering the Soul. This program is crafted to dive deeper into the breakout concepts we've covered this season. So, imagine a space where you're vividly empowered to reclaim your soul from the edges of burnout and confusion, a sanctuary where you can align your life with your most profound values and dreams, all within a community that supports each other and grows together. Your transformative journey begins this April, spanning 9 sessions over 3 months. And here's the exciting part. As one of the select 8 pioneers in this inaugural group, you will grab your chance to explore these life-changing concepts more intimately and help shape this experience for future participants. The value packed into this course is over $2,000, covering everything from personalized coaching to exclusive resources. But for you, my podcast family, as a part of this initial group, I'm offering this for just $60 a session or $165 a month. Seize this opportunity now. Feel the growth, the alignment, and the fulfillment at a fraction of the cost. So, when you're ready to be one of these impactful 8s, stepping into this journey with me, diving deep into reclaiming your life, simply email me at theoverflowinglifepodcast@gmail.com, all one word. Again, theoverflowinglifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can direct message me on Instagram at theoverflowinglife. Don't wait. Slots will fill up fast. There's only 8, and I can't wait to embark on this journey with you. I'm in. Are you? Now back to the show. So for leaders to understand their identity, it and their teams, it really allows us to operate from that abundance. What can you talk about that for a minute? Because I know you talk for hours about it, but like, you know, yeah, I don't know. What, keep going with that.
Well, it's like, you know, you've said it, and it's really cool because, you know, listening to you, I do know you, and I've watched the journey that you've been on, and I have a lot of respect for how you're moving and operating. Yeah, I really do. And so again, it's like, we're not sitting here like talking heads. We're like, and it's a journey. It's a struggle because of what you said. All right. Here's the struggle. So we are born into a worldview, as you're alluding to, and a worldview is not what party you belong to, or are you a conservative or a Democrat or a Christian, biblical, or a Muslim, Quranic worldview. Those aren't worldviews. That's what you're coming up because of your worldview. You're coming up with these team names and these separations and all that. So worldview is just the lens through which you see the world, and you learn a worldview. You're born into a worldview and you hear it 24/7. And there's only 2 worldviews. You can read economic theory. You can read anthropology. You can read religious stories of creation, and you're going to find these 2 worldviews. And it's the separation worldview and the connection worldview. Very simple. The separation worldview just says, look, there's not enough for anybody and everybody. So we got to separate into groups, and you got to protect your own because there's just not enough. Now, if anyone can't see that running our country, whatever party you're in, you're blind, or yeah. Companies, or like, it's not like about we. Anyway, so the separation worldview is built on scarcity. I'm not enough. There's not enough time. There's not enough money. There's not enough jobs. There's not enough anything. which leads to certainty, a search for certainty, which leads to extremism, which look at the extremism that's going on in our whatever side you're on, to perfectionism, to self-protection and self-promotion. That's a whole worldview. And 99% of the world operates in it all the time. The world. The other worldview that's out there that's harder, is the interconnected connection worldview, which says it's not scarcity in the world. There's enough in the world for everyone. There is enough. There's not enough for three people to own it all. That's a scarcity mindset. A scarcity mindset is like, I'm going to collect as much as I can, take it out of circulation so people have to come to me to get it, create separation. It creates conflict like that. In the enough worldview, it's like, there's enough. There's enough for me and my neighbor. There's enough because life is not certain. It's a mystery. Everything's a mystery. There is no certainty in this life other than you're going to die. And even that's a mystery. So it's all mystery. And so humans love mystery. Grace is a mystery. Love is a mystery. Forgiveness is a huge mystery that we don't even attempt. But it's all these beautiful mysteries, and we love mystery. We hate certainty. We hate formula, but it makes us feel safe. So we'll get into these bored, safe, destructive lives because we're afraid to be in mystery, which we truly love. It's sad. So when you're looking at those two worldviews, you know, it's not a matter of which is better. It's which one is true. That's the question. The scarcity worldview is not true. How do we know? Look at all of creation reality. Nothing, no tree is out there saying, I got to get more territory for myself. Nothing's doing that except humans, because humans are afraid because they think there's not enough. So I got to take what doesn't belong to me in order to protect my own and the strongest win kind of thing. Just finally, I'll say about that, you know, when COVID happened, you talk about a mystery. Oh my gosh, none of us knew what to do. Nobody knew what was really going on. But boy, did we go after certainty on it, right? These extremes, right? We went like, we weren't certain. We're certain. And so the certainty led to terrible scarcity mentality, to where, like in my neighborhood, when we found out that toilet paper was critical to our survival, which it wasn't, didn't even have anything to do with COVID. What did humans do? They killed themselves to get as much toilet paper as. If I said to my neighbors, you know, get out of my way, I got to get toilet paper. I love you, but I need the toilet paper more than you do. It's just ridiculous, because crisis doesn't make a person; it reveals a person. And what COVID revealed was how fast we'll separate into camps and insult one another. Families split up over the COVID. It was unbelievable, because we live and are trained in a separation scarcity worldview, and we move to it immediately. So if you're trying to build a team in a scarcity worldview, which is what we're doing, we're going to become more and more violent as the world is becoming more and more violent. But if you move into the connection worldview, which you can only do in a true identity, then it's like, you know what? There's enough. And if Chris and I are working together and Chris succeeds, I'm happy, because in an interconnected real worldview, when he succeeds, I succeed. And when he fails, I fail. And we think, if I just kick these people in my city out, we'll be fine. You're all going to go down. Everyone's going to go down. And everything in creation reality knows that, except delusional humans who are all into self.
Yeah. Self-protection. Right. I look around, you know, it is January 2024 as we're recording this. Man, I feel like we're back in, like, I don't know, what is it, 2020 or 2016? Like, it's just leadership here. Okay. Let me say this. I have come to believe firmly, and it's more and more deeply, I'm believing it more and more deeply. Business is a part of the redemption plan of the world. It plays a critical role. Therefore, leaders play a very critical role. And when I look around me, there is a leadership vacuum. And a big part of that right now is that scarcity, separate worldview and script playing over and over. And like, look, I'm not going to blame it all on the digital divide and social media. It certainly has exacerbated it because we're comparing ourselves and saying, I'm not enough, or I don't have that, I need that. But how, I mean, Okay. So leaders, and I'm trying to think like what I really want to help leaders do is to understand what I just said, that they play a very important part in making the world whole. And in order for that to happen, they've got to get whole. So with our conversation, they need to understand their identity, go through that process that we were talking about. And then, okay, now they've got to lead an organization in that. I don't know if you have any stories or advice or input on how do leaders then like, and I know we're in 10 minutes, we've talked about this process, not enough. We could go a lot deeper, but let's assume they get there. What do they do next? How do they lead an organization? And what advice or input would you have for leaders that are like, okay, I want to lead an organization from a connected worldview?
Yeah. So I'll give you examples and I'll have to be slightly vague because they're in process, but so we do this thing called Export, and what it is just it's a thing we do in our community that people can come in and we spend 3 days doing what you're talking about. We call it Export because we don't want to keep these things for ourselves. We're exporting them. It's our gift to the world. And so we want this, people to understand identity and worldview and how they're operating, what they're afraid of and all that. So so it's open. We have certain dates and it's open and people come. So So two small groups came, a total of probably 20 people. One of the groups was composed of doctors that just knew each other and they came, medical doctors. And another group was all from one professional sport. We'll just put that. And so they don't know each other. They'd come and they're together for 3 days. So we don't care what their vocation is or, if they're famous or not. We don't care. This is like human beings. We all do these exercises together. We're mixed together. What are you afraid of? We teach them how to truth tell, mind change, form change. But as they're doing it, they start to think, okay, if I understood who I really am, and then I understand a connected worldview, what would happen in my vocation if I took that back to my hospital or team? That's the final phase of what we do. Okay, how does that mind change bring form change? Because we're always trying to change the form of things and nobody's mind has changed. That's how we do. And the way we do it is through power and control, which creates constant conflict. So anyway, So the doctors, three doctors, just three of them go out. And in the following year, they decide, how can we change healthcare? Three guys, three people. How can we change healthcare? So all innovation is preceded by contemplation. So they take days of contemplation, these three doctors. In my vocation, in the truth of who I am, in a connected worldview, what would healthcare look like in my town, in my city? For 1 year they worked on that. And then I don't know, 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, one of them calls me, he goes, hey, we're having a dinner. We're inviting the medical profession to come to it. And in our little area, it's $40 a plate. Like, wow. Okay. It's rich doctors. So go to it. 85 doctors are there. 85 doctors are there. And they stand up, these three guys stand up and present a plan of preventative, low-cost healthcare for our community that allows the doctors to make a living, but all levels of society to come in and get well. That's what they called it, getting whole, getting well. And then they showed how they were doing it. And I called doctors I work with in medical universities and in other states and told them about it, and they all connected. That was three guys that went through this process. The professional athletes got together and spent the year doing, what would it look like if we had one whole franchise that operated in a connected, true identity worldview instead of I get my identity from how much money I make, from my salary, from my signing bonus, from wins. What would it look like if the sport was just joyful game? And they came up with a whole strategy too, which they're going to try and enact next year. But they're so excited about it. So here, finally on that, that's what you can do in real life. Companies can change everything if they have a model of leadership that people can look to that is other-focused, self-emptying, unconditional love. humans can't do what they've never seen. They don't see any leaders in business or politics that they can name that is other-focused, self-emptying, unconditional love. That's the connected worldview. But if we gave them models, people will move to it pretty rapidly because it's so joyful and it's so whole and it's so resilient. So in business, so last thing on that. So the we were having this discussion, like how do we, and I know you think about this all the time, Chris, how do we impact the business world? Well, one of our guys who's in the business world, one of our coaches, he said the other day, you know, I've been studying this question and the Romans said they wanted to know how to control a region or a city without leaving their military there. And they've, because they want their military out in the field, they don't want them, you know, running public affairs like the U.S. did in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds contemporarily relative.
Boy, and it obviously doesn't work, but we'll keep doing it because we don't have any innovation in that area. But what the Romans decided was if they controlled healthcare, education, entertainment, and athletics, they would run the whole place. So he just said that offhand. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, what about business? And the Romans said, if we control healthcare, education, athletics, and entertainment, all business will follow that, all of it, which is really brilliant. So then we thought, wow, what in our work in the around the country, even last night, had a fascinating conversation with a high-level congressperson who we've been working with for a while, and talking about what's 2024 look like in terms of all this. We realize that the areas that have most responded to identity has been healthcare, education. I mean, we're all over the educational system, athletics, and entertainment, right? And so in those places, how can we, you know, imagine if kids were watching entertainment that taught them wholeness and resiliency through understanding true identity and worldview. Imagine what they would be like. Imagine if when the doctors in our area are doing what they're putting people in community groups, the people come to the doctor that us like part of your treatment is you have to meet in a group of six people. They had people in there giving testimonies. We've never been in a community ever in our life. As soon as we got in the community, we started losing weight. That's what the doctors are prescribing. Get in a community group. And they said, you know what it costs? Nothing. He said, yeah, so we're not helping people get well. We're managing people's pain. That's what, you know, that's well, what a culture
and
does.
And to go back to the business, I mean, so the topics we're covering this season, right? You're in the second half of this season. You know, this episode won't be released for a month and a half or so. And we talk about authentic community being essential for leadership.
Yes.
And it's so, you know, to bring this down, you know, to the ground level for leaders, like, look, I mean, this is why I'm so passionate about the topics we needed this, or I felt like this season needed to be focused on the leader instead of external processes. It's like, look, the leader's in trouble. We've got, you know, the first episode, we defined the problem of our souls being sucked out of us by distraction, by, you know, phone and technology. And I know my listeners are going to be like, you've said this a million times, Chris, but I'm going to say it again because I'm going to say it to you. John Ortberg said on another podcast recently that
he's great.
The sense of flow that another guy from Hungary, and I can't say his name, I can't pronounce his name, talked about, the unaided mind tends towards chaos. So really all life is managing our consciousness in a way, right? And though that mindset of not enough and those voices that you're talking about with identity goes to that very foundation of managing our consciousness and the story that's being told there at an unconscious level. And so if we're not addressing that in a real way, we're in trouble. And he goes on to say, never before in history, this is probably the first time ever in human history that we have been able to outsource the management of our consciousness to things like technology. And that is so detrimental to leaders, which is why I'm starting with this. And this topic of identity is crucial to understanding your role in life, one. Number two, your role outside of business, because your identity does not come from your role in your business. And if it does, you're in trouble. And number two, when it is healthy and you've got a whole life and it's, I heard somebody say the other day that the things that count most are not what you get paid for in life, right? It's like, huh, okay, well, However, we have an identity that gets played out in vocation, in business, and you have a role to play to make your community whole like those doctors are doing. You can't do it from a false identity, right? And so I love what you said about model of leadership, which is others focused, self-emptying, unconditional love. And so leaders, reach out to Jamie, reach out to me. We can point you in the right directions. Obviously, you know, get in touch with Jamie. He's got coaches and processes that can help you with identity. And you can't give away what you don't have. And you also can't help but give away what you do have. So if you have the false identity, you're going to give that away, which is Peter Scazzaro said that in Emotionally Healthy Leader. And so once that happens, then you can go and say, great, well, how can this transform my business and then the world? Others focus, self-emptying, unconditional love. But you got to start with that identity. Let me ask, because I had a few folks that I polled about some questions that I wanted to make sure I talked about. And so what might cause people to, if they get a sense of their identity and they understand that, what have you seen, what triggers somebody to maybe lose their way or lose the grasp of the identity? Does that happen once somebody understands it?
Every day. I mean, I have to deal with this every single right? day. Yeah, because this is back to the worldview that you live in. So like you can take a minnow and raise it in a you know, tank that's healthy and pure and the water is amazing and the fish learns who the predators are and what the good food sources are. And then you throw it in a toxic pond, it's going to die. Right. So it's not because the fish doesn't know who it is or who everyone else is. It's breathing something that it doesn't know it's breathing and it's poisoning it. So one of the great struggles in identity is even what you're talking about, like social media. Right. We can outsource for the first time, but it's because we don't want to be internal. So we want to outsource. Like we don't want to go in.
It's here. Not a safe place for us to be.
Exactly right. So it's easy. That, you know, we should social media, all that can be the greatest and most amazing thing ever. But when wounded people use things, they use it to manage their own pain. That's what they use it for, or to escape, right? But a healthy person will use it for creativity and innovation and connectedness. So what crushes, like me, you know, like I have, you know, a whole calendar of things I'm going to do today. Most of them I feel incapable of doing. But, and so if I sat here more than, in my own brain going, wow, could I do this? No, you're going to be a disappointment in that. That's what I've heard my whole life growing up. You're a disappointment. It's very hard to reroute that neural pathway. But I have, you know, and it's constant discipline. It's like spiritual push-ups. You do them every day. And as soon as you stop, you get weaker. Like that's a fact of the universe. You have to stay in the discipline of these things. Everyone, it takes work to be successful in things, lots of work, but the work can be joyful. So what happens is like, I'll wake up in the morning. This is my process. I did it this morning. Wake up. Immediately, I get face down on the floor. This is just to help me recognize my position in the whole thing. Like, you're just one of everybody else. And I do confession. I do truth telling. Today, I have these tasks and I'm speaking to God. And here's what I believe about myself going at these tasks. I'm not able to do it. I'm a disappointment. This is what I believe. I give that belief to God. What do you say? Listen, you know, meditate, contemplate on it. And then give me wisdom to be that. Give me wisdom and strength to be who the reality of who I am, the truth of who I am and everything that I do today. It doesn't take me 3 minutes starting the process. I'm like, oh my gosh. Because here comes the world, the lie we call it, the empire saying, you're not enough. You are not enough. And here come the comparisons. Like here they are. Here they come. You know, look at that person. Look at this thing. And so if I'm secure in my identity, those things don't affect me. I'm like, yeah, bless you. Great. Fantastic. Good job. Well done. Beautiful. I don't like the way you did that, but listen, you're human, you're wounded, you're doing what you do. I've released you in forgiveness, that kind of beauty and wholeness and resiliency. And then you go through the day. And at the end of the day, I'm grateful. You know, I'm just grateful because really you only can work in the present tense. So that's all you really have. And I'm grateful. and then when I go to sleep and I wake up the next morning, I'm a disappointment again, right? And it's just that process. It's just that beautiful process, and it makes you grow, and it makes you innovate, and it makes you, it creates wholeness, which creates resiliency in you. And I'm telling you, you want to be on a team with people that do that.
Yes.
That's what you want. And you need, show me a leader. I taught this at an Ivy League school recently. And when I did worldview to, and you know, the crowd would be not conservative at all, but, and maybe atheistic, doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. But while I was doing worldviews, they totally agreed at the end that, yeah, we agree. We're living in a separation scarcity. No question about it. And we're being taught leadership in a separation scarcity strategy, which is producing greater and greater conflict in our country and world. And so, and then I said, do you love that? And they said, no, we hate it. We didn't know there was an alternative. Here's the alternative connective worldview. Look out the window. There it is in process. Look at that mountain. There it is working. Connected worldview. There it is. Everything can only exist in relationship to another. You can't separate and live in this reality that we're in. And they said, okay, that's beautiful. Who's a leader that lives like that? That's what they asked me. They couldn't think of a leader that they know that's not self-protecting and self-promoting, working scarcity. And it's all about beat the competition, beat the competition, beat the competition. I said, can't we win the competition? Couldn't we win the competition? Couldn't we win the Taliban instead of beating them? We don't know how to do it. All we know how to do is beat and fight and predatorial economics. That's all we know, but it doesn't work. It creates world wars. And so they said, show us a leader. And I said, Martin Luther King Jr., Nelson Mandela, Gandhi. And then I said, but ask those guys who their model was. And they'll say Jesus. And I said, so I don't care what you think about Jesus, whether he's divinity or not. That's a world leader. That's a leader that had a huge amount of impact with no army and no political power. That demonstrates, and this is the message, and Martin Luther King Jr. Could get white people to march with him, right? That's the beauty. That's the incredible thing. And even then, he was willing to lay down his life. But what Jesus modeled and Martin Luther King saw in Mandela and is forgiveness, right? And just this incredible statement, if you want to conquer the Roman Empire that's oppressing you, you need to serve them and love them. And that will bring transformation to him. And it did.
Go the second mile.
It worked.
Yep.
And so the students were like, yeah, okay, that's fair. Those are fair historical evidence of that. And then one of them said, does that mean that we have to lay down our life for our enemy? And I said, yes, it does. And then he said, then I'm out. Boom, there it is. There's the self-protection and self-promotion. Even when we see the beauty of the other, it's still like, in the end, though, I got to watch out for number one. And bam, we're back at the same point.
Yeah. Okay. So here's what I love about what you just said. We didn't plan this. So part of what I'm sharing with people, if you're going to fight the empire, right, we'll use your language, to fight the empire, not only do you have to know identity, but you have to have some practices that you practice. It's not trying, it's training, it's practicing.
Right.
And what you said is every day you have these practices that go back to push the waters back, to push the empire back, to remind you who you really are, and to live in that state. And here's the answer to the question in a simple way. How do people lose their identity, lose their way? They don't have those practices. They say, oh, that's great. And then they don't do anything with it. They don't protect it, and they don't live in that. They don't practice that. And that's why a large part of why I'm bringing these practices to leaders, even though they're ancient practices and maybe more religious than, there's a lot of value. We must have these practices. We must slow down. We must contemplate. You know, we've got to surrender and understand our identity and all of that stuff, or leadership doesn't work. You continue to operate in the scarce mindset, and we can't, it's not going to work. The world needs us to, needs us. I put that in quotes. But you know, if we're going to be a part of the plan of redemption, as I'm saying it, then we've got to get into that other mindset. Okay, we are out of time. And so before we run out of time, Jamie, I want to ask if in 30 or 60 seconds, I don't know, would you be able to share your definition of leadership with us? And then I want to give you a chance to, how can people find you?
Yeah, well, our website, identityexchange.com, it's all kinds of resources on there. It's out now, but there's a free download on there called Finding Hope in Depression, which I just encourage people to check into. It's really helpful. My definition of leadership is serve. It really is serve. I love, just going back to the example of Jesus just as a historical example. When he says to the Samaritan woman who's very separated, the Jews and the Samaritans, very separate, very hostile towards one another, very similar to the situation in the Middle East today. And Jesus said, and she identifies him as a Jew and a man, and she's a Samaritan and a woman, all the things that we're fighting about. And she's not a good woman. She's a bad woman. And how dare you tell me and all this. And Jesus says to her, if you knew who I was and the gift I am sent to you by God, your identity is your gift to the world. As a leader, as anyone, your identity, my gift to my kids is not that I'm a good dad. It's that I know how to untie their knots. That's all I've ever done in their life. And they know that. And my gift to my wife is I untie her knots. My wife is a timeless life giver. That's her identity. What she gives to me is timeless life. That's what she does. And we exchange our identities. We share our identities. And when I go to work on my team, my gift to my team is I untie their knots. And then we share those identities and together you have a body, a whole body. And people are like, how do I be a good dad? And how do I be a good, learn your identity and give it to the world. Where? Everywhere, all day long. Leadership. And Jesus says, if you understood who I was, my identity, which you don't because you're calling me a Jew and a man, and that's not an identity. If you understood who I was, you would ask me to get you a drink, to serve you, and I will. Ask me to serve you, and I will. That's an astounding statement. So as a leader, I'm here to untie your knots. Well, I untie your knots, you give your identity as a gift to the team. And together, we're going to innovate and create and resolve the problem of conflict in the areas where we've been invited to work. And that's what we do. And when I look at my team, the way we start every team meeting is anyone dealing with negative emotion? Like, we have to make sure the team every day is in the truth of who they really are, because that's their highest creative level. Then whatever we're going to face in the day, we're going to create together and innovate, but it begins with contemplation. Serve. That's my serve. You want to hear the best counterterrorism stories ever from operatives out there in the world. They will tell you they fought for a while, but then they learned to serve, and that turns the tide every time.
Well, Jamie, it's been an honor and a pleasure. And I know without a shadow of a doubt, you've untied some knots for people in this conversation. I know even with what you just said about applying your identity to your marriage and family, untied a knot for me right there. So I deeply appreciate you. You already know that. And yet I hope some of the listeners that listen to this, I know when they hear you, go search him out. Go look it up on YouTube. There's plenty of content. Find him at his website, identityexchange.com. Pick up his book, Living Fearless. Get to know Jamie, because as a leader, what he has to say is essential. So thank you, Jamie. I appreciate you, man.
Hey, thanks for being an example, Chris. Thank you.
Next week, we tackle the topic of self-awareness, a trait hailed as the cornerstone of success for any CEO. We'll not only define self-awareness, but also share our personal experiences and growth in this area. Plus, we'll provide practical tips for enhancing your own self-awareness. Considering the insights from a former VP of Google, you won't want to miss this conversation. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Overflowing Life. If our message struck a chord with you, please subscribe and connect with us. Share your thoughts, questions, and stories with us on Instagram at The Overflowing Life, or visit theoverflowinglife.com. And if you're looking for coaching that helps you create an overflowing life, please reach out to us. We'd love to partner with you. See you next week.